It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Yesterday, a verdict was announced in the trial of two high school football players in Steubenville, Ohio. The players were found guilty of raping a 16-year-old girl. Steubenville High School students Trent Mays and Malik Richmond face a possible sentence of detention in juvenile jail until they turn 21, capping a case that came to light via a barrage of morning-after text messages, social media posts, and online photos and video. I'm joined now by Pitt Law Professor David Harris. David, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's good to be with you, Paul.
We heard the judge announce the verdict yesterday, and it came on a Sunday. Explain what was going on here, because this seems rather unusual.
Yes, we had a trial in juvenile court, and one of the things that means is that there is no jury. It is only a judge running the court. In a circumstance like that, you wouldn't necessarily expect every one of the usual scheduling rules to apply. So there's no jury to worry about for what they're going to do over the weekend, whether they want to go home to their families. So the judge could, as he did, have testimony actually on Saturday, and then once the trial was over and the testimony is in, announce the verdict on Sunday. He's not doing this in any way that will inconvenience anybody except the court staff and the other people involved. So he's free to do that and move things along to a greater degree, since it's just him as the decision maker.
The two young men will only be in jail until they are 21. Will their records be sealed?
Most states seal juvenile records, but in this case, their names are out there in the media much more widely than it would be the case even if their criminal records were open. So what will happen is once they are out and they are adults, there will be restrictions on whether or not employers can ask about their past criminal records. There may be limits on what can happen as far as counting their juvenile offenses against them if they ever offend as adults. But, you know, if the records get sealed, and I don't know if Ohio does that, it'll be the most open secret ever.
And we know the young men's names. We've seen their faces. Aren't juveniles normally shielded from this kind of media attention?
Usually they are. I mean, the state that I did my juvenile court work in as an attorney, we would identify the kids involved if they ever got into a court document by first name and initial of the last name. So it would be, you know, Milton P. or Joe A. And that's all you would see. In other states, it's even more cryptic. It's both initials. So it's really hard to understand why that wouldn't carry over into other matters. But each state, as far as juvenile court, is its own little jurisdiction. So Ohio could decide that it doesn't have to do that, or that the judge can usually do that but has the power to lift that anonymity if the judge wants to.
Now, the two individuals in this case could have been tried, or in the case in which the verdict was announced yesterday, they could have been tried as adults, but they weren't. Why not?
Well, states vary on this, but usually what it takes to be tried as an adult is for the state to petition for a waiver of juvenile court jurisdiction. And that takes a judge deciding that these are not only juvenile offenders who've committed an adult crime, but juveniles who cannot be rehabilitated in the ways that we want to happen in juvenile court. The whole idea behind juvenile court is that the people who are coming there as defendants are not actually really defendants in the same sense as adults, because they are not fully formed. They can still be reached. They can still be changed. They can still be rehabilitated. And so in general, in order to move a case from juvenile court to adult court, you have to have this sort of dual finding that the crime is an adult crime and that the subjects of the trial could not be helped as we would like to have juveniles be helped. And in this case, the state simply did not file those petitions, elected to go ahead against these two defendants as juveniles.
Explain some of the other unusual aspects about this case.
Well, one of the most unusual aspects was that the social media played such a huge, just outsized role in this. It's a good bet that without all of the social media evidence that was later discovered, This case would have been much harder, maybe impossible to prove. It would have turned into a he said, she said, or maybe nothing at all, because the victim purports to be too drunk to remember anything. And by its nature, this crime was basically committed with only a few people around. So it would be my bet that this case probably would have gone nowhere without the social media evidence that was discovered and then excavated and pulled out of all the phones and everything else. People feel these days, at least some do, that you haven't done anything, whether it's gone out for the evening or something worse, unless you document it on social media, unless you text about it, Twitter about it, everything else. And that impulse leaves out the fact that these these electronic signals we're sending out onto the internet are basically visible to almost everyone, and they live forever, no matter if you try to delete them or not. So that was the major evidence that pushed this case forward. The other thing that struck me as very unusual was that you had a victim who was too drunk to remember what happened by her own testimony, and yet the defense was consent. So you have a major roadblock for the defense that may have been just the only defense available, and they had to try to prove that consent was given, and yet you had somebody testifying, I was too drunk to know what happened to me, let alone to give effective consent to sexual activity. So, you know, as a defense lawyer, you play the cards you're dealt. You don't really have any choice, and this just may have been the only alternative for a defense for them.
We're talking with Pitt Law Professor David Harris here on Essential Pittsburgh about the Steubenville rape case. The two young men who were found guilty, they get out of jail at 21. Won't they be registered sex offenders?
I believe that's right, Paul, and that's a separate part of the penalty from whatever time they might serve. And that's something that's come along in the last 10 years, registration as sex offenders. And it applies to them just like it would apply to anybody else convicted of these crimes. And that has its own stigma and burdens attached to it. I don't say that they're not, it's not deserved or anything. It's certainly the new reality for sex offenses. This is something that goes along even with a plea of guilty when you don't go to jail. So it's not something that would have been unexpected, at least to their lawyers.
Now, the case is over for these boys, but it's not over entirely. Talk about what happens next.
Well, it is over for them, and they'll go on. They're already in custody, and they'll be in custody for one of them at least for a year, for the other for 2 years, and then the court will decide how much longer they will serve until they're 21. But even with that verdict, the Attorney General of Ohio announced that he was going to convene a grand jury to investigate the case. Now, this may strike some as odd because you'd think there was an investigation and so forth, but you of course recall that there was a lot of talk, many allegations about the investigation not being thorough, that it was biased, that there was a cover-up. I don't think there's any way for any of us to know that, but the Attorney General said he is concerned to get to the bottom of it if there's anything more. He also said that a number of witnesses, I think he said 16, refused to talk to them. So he wants to convene a grand jury where he can put witnesses in front of the grand jury under oath and order them to talk. Now, the problem is that those same witnesses can simply take the Fifth Amendment and refuse to talk. And so the decision will have to be made at that time whether to give those witnesses immunity to get the full truth out. It's always chancy to predict what will happen, but I would be surprised if there were more prosecutions, more cases after the grand jury meets. Though there may be more information that emerges from witnesses given immunity, very tough to see how at this point we would actually have more prosecutions. There was a lot of calls for people to be prosecuted who knew about it, didn't stop it, took photographs, things like that. But the bottom line with American law is you're not under any obligation to stop crimes. You're under obligations not to do crimes.
Pitt Law Professor David Harris joining us. As always, David, great thanks to you.
Very good to be with you, Paul. Take care.
Coming up, we'll get a city council update from Noah Broad when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.